You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome, welcome to another great edition of the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. As usual, I am your host, Hende, and welcome to the very first edition of the Eagle Sports Zone of 2026. Happy New Year, since the last time we spoke was last year. Hope everyone is enjoying the festive season and getting ready to transition back to our everyday lives. And in 2026, hopefully, some more great things are going to be happening in the sporting world. But before we get to that, you are tuned in to your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM Namibia. If you haven't already, get into your phone right now and download the Eagle FM mobile application that is free to download on the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. Simply type in Eagle FM Namibia and you will have access to your favorite talk radio station wherever you are in the entire world. So if you're in South Africa, maybe you're in Angola, maybe you're in China, you're in Germany, you're in the United States, you're in Argentina, you can listen to Eagle FM. Also, you can visit our website, that's www.eaglefm.com.na, to listen to Eagle FM wherever you are. That's on your mobile device or on your laptop, on your desktop. However it is you access the internet, you can tune into your favorite talk radio station. And if for whatever reason you missed your favorite show, or there's another show you want to listen to again, then fear not, simply go to the podcast section of the Eagle FM website or the mobile application and you will be able to download and listen to any podcast from a show that you heard on Eagle FM beforehand. So that's shows from last week, shows from last month, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, they're all there. Available for you at your fingertips. Now, the number in our studio is 083-288-401, and that's 083-288-401 if you want to chime in. Today's trivia question, not really a question, but I just want you to call in and tell me who you think is going to take it all at the 2025 African Cup of Nations currently taking place in Morocco. And speaking of currently, Morocco has kicked off against Tanzania in the round of 16. Yesterday we had Mali and Tunisia playing to a 1-1 draw after extra time, and Mali taking it all on penalties by winning 3-2. So Mali advanced to the quarterfinals, and then Senegal, also one of the tournament favorites, faced off against Sudan in the knockout, winning at 3-1. With Ibrahim Mbaye and Papa Gay scoring a brace for these Lions of Senegal. So currently Morocco and Tanzania 0-0. And then South Africa, Bafana Bafana, taking on Cameroon at 9 o'clock. So I'll keep you up to date on everything in the Morocco fixture as it happens. On the club side of things, right now we have Real Madrid playing against Real Betis in La Liga. Real Madrid leading 1-0 thanks to a goal from Gonzalo Garcia. And as it stands right now in the La Liga table, Barcelona leads on 49 points, with Real Madrid trailing in second on 45 points. Barcelona were in action yesterday against Espanyol, winning that one 2-0 thanks to a penalty from Robert Lewandowski and Danny Olmo. Both coming through with late goals for Barcelona. And on the Premier League side of things, today you had Manchester United in action against Leeds United. That match ending 1-1. So consecutive draws for the Red Devils. Currently, the defending champions are in action against Fulham. It is half-time and Fulham are in the lead 1-0 thanks to a goal from Harry Wilson. And the match of the day will be Manchester City against Chelsea at 7:30. I'll still be on air, so stay tuned for updates coming from that fixture. And in the table, before we get to the table, the matches that took place yesterday, you had the Gunners beating Bournemouth 3-2 and Aston Villa beating Nottingham Forest 3-1. And currently, the Premier League table as it stands, you have the Gunners on 48 points in first place, Aston Villa in second on 42 points, Manchester City, who are in action this evening against Chelsea, in third on 41 points, and the defending champions trailing quite far behind in fourth on 33 points, that is Liverpool, followed by the Red Devils of Manchester United on 31 points in fifth place. So getting back to AFCON, there's a piece of content I would like to present to you guys for you guys to digest, and we'll discuss when we come back from said clip.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Africa. Premier Bet Namibia Totes.
54.
Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Four countries, over 1,000 languages, 1.2 billion people. We hear a lot in the West about the struggles of Africa. Poverty, war and disease, colonialism, neocolonialism, and exploitation. We hear an awful lot less about the strengths and positive aspects of Africa. The colour, vibrance, food, culture, and, most notably of all, the people themselves. It creates a distorted image of an entire continent in a lot of people's minds. Roughly a third of Europeans are still proud of their country's empires and believe the countries they colonised are better off because of it, largely because of the idea that colonialism civilised Africa, which was perennially portrayed as being primitive and uncivilised. In Chinese video game culture, unlucky or incompetent gamers are referred to as Africans due to an entrenched association in Chinese culture between black faces and bad luck. And in America, the number of people who view Africa as being one big homogenous block, from the pyramids of Giza all the way to the bustling city bowl of Cape Town, and even as literally one country, rather than as an entire continent in some instances, has become almost a meme. People in Tunisia and Lesotho are both referred to as Africans, even though the distance between the two countries is greater than the distance between India and Australia, or London and New York. As a result, when a civil war breaks out in Ethiopia, it tars Westerners' perceptions of Mauritania, over 3,000 miles away, because it's all Africa. In reality, ethnically, socially, and culturally, Africa is the most diverse continent in the world. These same stereotypes and misconceptions have long blighted the greatest event in the African football calendar. The Africa Cup of Nations, or AFCON, is the pinnacle of the African game. Just like the Euros or the Copa America, it pits the continent's finest teams up against one another in a month-long festival of football. And rarely has the term festival, in the context of football, felt more appropriate than with AFCON. The diversity of Africa that I just referenced is represented in all of its glory at the Africa Cup of Nations, both on the pitch and off it. You have the passion and desire of Morocco, which captured the world's imagination at the 2022 World Cup, the experience and sheer star power of Senegal, the excitement and flair of the host nation, Ivory Coast, the dynamism and attacking prowess of Nigeria, the pedigree and obsession with this competition of Egypt, the speed and vibrancy of Mali, and the sheer sense of excitement and adventure among minnows like the Gambia and Cape Verde. That this tournament, then, which is as rich and entertaining as any in world football, should be dismissed, treated as a hindrance due to its timing, or even mocked and derided, I think represents a stain on the sport, But much worse than that, it is causing some people to miss out on some genuinely brilliant football. In today's video, I'm going to make it my mission to convince you of that fact. So sit back, relax, and join me on a journey to Africa, where the AFCON has just kicked off in Ivory Coast, as we take a look at both the perception and discourse that surrounds the Africa Cup of Nations, why it is inaccurate and at times downright offensive, and also some of the fascinating and exhilarating narratives and stories ahead of this AFCON that are routinely overlooked as a result. Over a number of decades, a sometimes subtle and sometimes explicit narrative has been woven about the Africa Cup of Nations. AFCON is portrayed as a tournament which is mired by scandals and corruption, where referees, defending, and goalkeeping are a farce. Not all of that is untrue. Let's just start with the scandals and corruption. It is true that both the Confederation of African Football, or CAF, and the AFCON by extension have been blighted by scandals in the past. I myself made a video 2 years ago, on the eve of the 2021 Africa Cup of Nations in Cameroon, about the many controversies that surrounded that tournament and the build-up to it. So clearly, I don't have any issue with people reporting on or covering those issues, otherwise I'd be a bigger hypocrite than Jordan Henderson. Cameroon had first been stripped of 2019 AFCON hosting rights because they failed to deliver promised stadium and infrastructure projects on time, which is why they were pushed back to host in 2021, Ivory Coast to 2023, and Guinea to 2025 as a result. Perfectly legitimate questions were asked, relating to COVID denialism, potential safety concerns, and corruption which went right to the top of both the Confederation of African Football and Cameroon's government itself, which has been governed effectively as a one-party state by 90-year-old Paul Biya for more than 40 years. Likewise, at the tournament, when referee Yanni Sikazwe blew for full-time after only 85 minutes of Tunisia's group stage tie with Mali, and then again in the 89th minute, it wasn't unreasonable for the world's media to report on it, or for social media to go into overdrive. That would happen if the same thing happened in any major international tournament. The reality, however, is that the same kinds of things, whether that be corruption, controversies, or refereeing howlers, do indeed happen at every other major international tournament. And while they are heavily reported on, they don't tend to undermine those tournaments as a whole. The World Cup remains the most prestigious tournament in world football, and in world sport, in terms of viewership and interest, despite there being an almost unanimous consensus among football fans that FIFA, world football's governing body, and World Cups themselves are laughably corrupt. UEFA is considered to be the world's foremost football confederation, and the Euros the most formidable regional tournament in the international game, despite Michel Platini and Alexander Čeferin successfully having eroded any false pretenses that UEFA had any moral high ground whatsoever over FIFA, and the Premier League is the most popular and prestigious league in world football, despite being a hive mind of some of the most dubious and unscrupulous characters known to man, who now effectively own and administer the league with near total impunity. FIFA's 2015 corruption scandal literally saw its longtime president, Sepp Blatter, booted out of office and banned, meanwhile 12 members of the organization's executive committee pled guilty. There are rogue warlords overseeing their own personal fiefdoms at gunpoint who look at the organisation and individuals who run world football and think, "Ooh, I'm not sure about that, mate. It just seems to be a bit too on the nose. Have you thought about maybe being just a little bit more subtle?" And yet, the World Cup, even when hosted in an authoritarian dictatorship, that would be suspended by FIFA and UEFA less than 4 years later for escalating an invasion which they began 4 years before hosting the tournament, or in a gas-rich micro-state with only 300,000 citizens, who hosted the tournament on the back of, at best, indentured servants, has never lost its glisten or gleam. Both off, and in many instances at least, on the pitch, the history of the World Cup is a history of chaos and corruption. From Mussolini handpicking referees in 1934, to Argentina's right-wing military junta hosting a World Cup final in which some very strange things happened, and Argentina won, within a stone's throw of the dictatorship's torture chambers and various killing fields. But when people think of the World Cup, by and large, they think of Pelé, Maradona and Lionel Messi. They think of the game of the century, Germany thrashing Brazil, Zidane's brace in 98, Baggio's blazed penalty in 94, Bergkamp's touch and finish against Argentina, and Mbappe's ultimately futile hat-trick in the most recent World Cup final. Even when they do think of scandalous and controversial moments, of which there have been many, Zizou's headbutt, Luis Suarez biting Giorgio Chiellini, or Diego Maradona's so-called hand of God, they aren't viewed in the same negative light, casting a shadow on the entire tournament, but rather as abnormal moments, which in some ways only add to the drama and entertainment. Zambian referee Yanni Sikazwe twice blowing his final whistle before the 90-minute mark was a crazy moment. There can be no doubt about it. But was it really any crazier than English referee Graham Pohl issuing Croatia's Josip Simunic with 3 yellow cards at the 2006 World Cup? Yet no one thinks of the 2006 World Cup, in Germany, in which that was far from the only controversy, as being somehow illegitimate or lessened as a competition because of that incident. But for some reason, when African football federations and the Confederation of African Football as a whole are hit with a corruption scandal, or the AFCON has a mad moment of crazy refereeing, it is seen as an indictment of an entire tournament and continent. Yanni Sikazwe, it should really be said, was a FIFA-listed referee for 15 years until his retirement in 2022, who refereed at both the 2018 and 2022 World Cups. He obviously knew how long football matches are supposed to be, but it was later revealed that he had suffered severe heatstroke during the game, resulting in his initially seemingly bizarre lapses in judgment. The Tunisia vs Mali game in which he made those errors was played in 34 degree heat, that is over 93 Fahrenheit for Americans, with 65% humidity inside the ground. In some ways, therefore, it could be argued that Sikazwe's error was more justifiable than Graham Pohl's. In the interest of total fairness, it was also 30 degrees in Germany when Pohl brandished Josip Simunic with 3 yellow cards, though I have never seen any evidence that he had heatstroke. I will give you another example, this time from the playing side of things. When Virgil van Dijk makes a mistake leading to a goal, it's not as though that mistake is ignored. Quite the opposite, in fact. Because he is such a high-profile player, playing for a high-profile team, it will probably be more heavily highlighted and scrutinised than an equivalent mistake made by a defender at AFCON. However, the target of the criticism, or the butt of the joke on social media, will be Virgil van Dijk, or whoever the offending player happens to be. Not the Premier League, Champions League, or European football as a collective. That's a crucial difference, and when you think about it, it is a bizarre one. The same is true of women's football. When a Premier League or Serie A goalkeeper makes a mistake, they are mocked and criticised. When an AFCON or women's goalkeeper makes a mistake, the entirety of African or women's goalkeeping is mocked and criticised. This is just one of the ways in which African football and AFCON are stereotyped. The classic stereotype, of course, despite having so little and, in fact, no basis in fact, is that African players, and black footballers more broadly, have great athleticism, they're quick, strong and powerful, but tactically or technically, they are typecast as being inferior. Analysis of more than 2,000 statements describing light and dark-skinned players by commentators in over 80 Premier League, Serie A, La Liga and Ligue 1 games by the Danish research firm Run Repeat showed light-skinned players were most likely to be singled out for praise for their intelligence, hard work and quality, in direct contrast to darker-skinned players who were much more likely to be singled out for their physical attributes. On average, commentators were 6.5 times more likely to highlight the power of a darker-skinned player compared to a lighter-skinned one, and over 3 times more likely to draw reference to their pace. Of course, there is nothing wrong with highlighting the power of someone like Didier Drogba, the strength of Christopher Samba, or the speed of Adama Traoré. That's just doing your job. But the reality is that these references, albeit probably entirely subconsciously, are incredibly selective and racialized. When you have players as gifted as Mohamed Kudus and Riyad Mahrez playing in your own league system, the latter of whom was as far from being powerful as it is possible to be, as slight as a sheet of tracing paper, or previously the likes of Lakdar Balumi, Nwankwo Kanu and JJ Okocha, as intelligent as Evis Basuma and Patmatar Sarr, the latter of whom is still only 21, and that's just two examples from Tottenham. The only explanation for such a nonsensical perception is tired stereotypes and racial categorisation. Heck, when Naby Keita joined Liverpool, Danny Murphy profiled him as being a powerful box-to-box player in the mould of Jordan Henderson, when, in actual fact, Keita is a short, skinny and weak midfield creator made out of glass, who has quick and tidy feet and an eye for a pass. So, basically, the precise opposite of the African stereotype he was presented as. Arguably Europe's greatest ever centre-forward, and I use the word Europe's in the loosest sense of the term, was Eusebio, who was born and raised in Mozambique to a Mozambican mother and an Angolan father. Eusebio was born in colonial-era Mozambique, though, governed by the Portuguese, like fellow Portugal star man Mario Coluna, and so he represented Portugal, scoring 41 goals in 64 games, winning the 1966 World Cup Golden Boot and the 1965 Ballon d'Or. George Weah revolutionised the centre-forward role through his skill and intelligence. Yaya Toure won a Champions League final playing as a centre-back for Barcelona, and a Premier League title in which he scored 24 goals from midfield for Manchester City, and the likes of Marcel Desailly, Patrick Vieira, Karim Benzema and Zinedine Zidane, legends of the European club and international game, were all of African descent. Desailly was born in Ghana and Vieira in Senegal. At the opposite end of the spectrum, from the legitimate criticism that is weaponized to discredit an entire tournament and competition, and what I would call lying by omission if the only time AFCON is ever mentioned is to highlight a negative story or a narrative designed to mock it, you also have the arguably even worse outright untruths. Because AFCON is so rarely covered with any kind of depth, thought, or even just the most basic of journalistic standards, not just in the West, but pretty much anywhere outside of Africa, and indeed, at times even within Africa, it makes it incredibly easy to just lie or spin sensationalist and dishonest stories about it without your audience being able to sort the fact from the fiction, because they haven't been equipped with the tools to do so, and the lies and distortions fit neatly into the...
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh?
Africa.
And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And the lies and distortions fit neatly into the broader narrative and web of deception and lies that you've cultivated over many years. This is going to sound very arrogant, but if it's any consolation, I am primarily being arrogant on your behalf. If I made a video in which I talked about, let's just say, the entire Ghana team engaging in some wacky or eccentric voodoo practice, jabbing pins into a little effigy of Mohamed Salah in an effort to bring about the Egyptian star's demise, and I had just completely made it all up, an awful lot of you would think, this sounds a bit strange, I haven't heard of this anywhere else, and I'll just have a quick Google to see if this has been reported by anyone else that I trust. And then I would get loads of comments saying, what on earth are you talking about, Alfie? Did you just make that entire segment up? And that is because of the audience that I've cultivated by, for the most part, I think, not lying all of the time, and making several videos talking about so-called fake news stories that have become commonly accepted, particularly online, and explaining how and why that disinformation spread, such as my video about this clip that went viral online, despite the received wisdom about it being the owner's son being a complete distortion, the bizarre, totally implausible, and deeply misogynistic story that spread like wildfire online and was even reported by several supposedly reputable publications about Ashraf Hakimi having put all of his assets into his mother's name, meaning his wife was entitled to nothing when leaving him after he had been accused of rape, and most notably, for me at least, my video about Zaire at the 1974 World Cup and the iconic moment in which one of their players runs out of a defensive wall to take Brazil's attacking free kick, which many people still believe to this day was because he didn't know the rules of football when, in reality, it belied a much darker truth. That last video marked the moment when I started making a lot more video essays and documentary-style videos like this, rather than lists on this channel, due to the response that it got. And it was remarkably similar to this one, in terms of addressing a lot of the same narratives and misconceptions about Africans and African footballers. Zaire, now DR Congo, had just won AFCON for the second time in 6 years before that World Cup, and were a trailblazing African team, packed full of outstanding players, who qualified for the 1974 World Cup as Africa's sole representatives, with a remarkable unbeaten qualifying campaign. The idea, therefore, that any of their players wouldn't know the rules of football, including something as basic as the fact that you don't just run out of your own wall and take an opposing team's free kick for them, is probably one of the stupidest and most ludicrous myths in all of world football. And yet, there was a time when, having never really thought about it, because it is just so prevalent, I accepted it as fact, as no doubt will so many of you. But I think that's only really possible for people to be convinced that a brilliant footballer in a brilliant football team doesn't know one of the most basic rules of football when you have decades of dismissal, derision, and baseless stereotypes being repeated about African football ad infinitum. As I said in that video, if that had been a Danish, Canadian, or New Zealander who had done that at a World Cup, despite the fact that they were all worse teams than Zaire at that time, would anyone really have believed, with almost no doubt or hesitation, that they didn't know that they weren't supposed to run out of a defensive wall and take an opponent's free kick for them? Personally, I have a hard time believing that they would, or that a younger version of myself would, and it is worth asking the question of why you would believe it in the case of Zaire, but not Canada or New Zealand. To give another example, if I made a video in which I said a Gabon player had been called before a CAF disciplinary committee ahead of this AFCON to explain why his mother died in 1986, but he was born in 1990, I think a lot of you watching this would question it, unless I could provide substantial and overwhelming evidence. And yet, regrettably, that was one of the biggest stories coming into this AFCON. This exact claim, made about Gwela Kangakaku, was everywhere just days before the tournament began. That's despite the fact that, insofar as there is any truth to the story whatsoever, it is almost 3 years old. Of course, at the AFCON, an open-age competition, there would be no point in pretending to be younger than you actually are, an accusation, once again, which is routinely thrown at African footballers who look old for their age, whether there is any evidence of it or not, and in the case of Kanga, the actual story is that, in April 2021, the Congolese Association Football Federation, which represents football in DR Congo, filed a complaint against Kanga, who has represented Gabon since 2011, claiming that they had evidence that he was in fact born in DR Congo to Congolese parents and was therefore ineligible to represent Gabon. DR Congo's motive, whether legitimate or not, was because they had missed out on qualifying for AFCON 2021 by 1 point behind the Gambia and Gabon. They hoped that if they could prove that Kanga was ineligible to represent Gabon, Gabon would be deducted points in qualifying, and they would therefore qualify ahead of them. All of this context was omitted from the sensationalist stories and headlines about Kanga on the eve of this AFCON, as was the fact that CAF actually dismissed DR Congo's claims, and that all of this happened years ago, which, you know, call me Joseph Pulitzer, but that would seem like quite important context. You might expect this of meme and joke accounts like Troll Football or Football Funnies on Twitter, but you probably wouldn't expect it, or at least could be forgiven for hoping for better, from a group like beIN Sports, a Qatari state-owned broadcaster, and one of the largest sports broadcasters in the world, and the biggest in the Arab world, which is chaired by PSG president Nasser Al-Khelaifi, with 1.4 million followers on Twitter. You would be wrong to expect better, though, since that is exactly what they did. And I think it's illustrative of the fact that it's not just the West that spreads disinformation about AFCON, though it may be the worst offenders. It is actually a much broader problem. Every time an outlet or publication writes or talks about AFCON, they have the ability to either reinforce or challenge stereotypes about the tournament and African football. Invariably, they choose to reinforce it. So why is this the case? Well, different media organisations have different motives. For some, indeed, I would argue for most, it is all about business. Memeable content is often clickable content, and more clicks means more ad revenue. The narrative around AFCON is already very firmly established. These accounts and organisations have zero interest in challenging it, and even if they aren't actively interested in entrenching those lies and stereotypes, they are perfectly willing to do just that in the name of increasing their revenue. It is a toxic, but largely dispassionate business model, which can lead to some very bad outcomes. Then you have the more sinister players for whom, at least in part, it is ideological. Britain has several unabashedly racist publications who, as numerous studies have repeatedly shown, have zero interest in portraying ethnic or religious minorities in a balanced, nuanced or reasonable way. Their modus operandi is to spread hate and create distortions by any means necessary. It has, for the most part, however, become more frowned upon within polite society to just be openly and explicitly racist. It still happens, don't get me wrong, you need only pick up a copy of The Times or The Spectator, though I wouldn't recommend it for your mental health, but as a rule, a subtler sort of racism has become the aim of the game, whereby you exoticise, otherise and dehumanise ethnic minorities, and then pretend to be surprised or claim to just be reflecting the views of your own audience when your readers are shown to be frothing at the mouths racists. Of course, football is far from the sharpest edge of this editorial sword, and footballers far from its most harshly impacted victims. But it plays its minor part. The end result is the environment that we all now inhabit, where African football and AFCON is, at best, dismissed and considered an inconvenience and, at worst, fueling the fire of evidence-free racism. We probably spend longer, in England at least, talking about the timing and disruption caused by AFCON than we do about the tournament itself. Don't get me wrong, I don't expect any football fan to jump for joy when they lose a key player during a key part of the season. I mean, this is hardly an abstract concept for me to entertain. My own team, Hull City, have lost Adama Traore and Jean-Michel Seri to this AFCON, the latter of whom is one of our most important players. But even under the mildest of inspection and scrutiny, the timing debate is exposed as being a totally ludicrous one. AFCON is played in the winter rather than the summer, primarily because much of Africa is very hot in the summer. I know, this may come as a shock. Much of it is very hot in the winter, in fact, but even hotter in the summer. Much of Africa, especially around the Horn of Africa and both North and West Africa, are simply much, much too hot in the summer months to host a major football tournament safely. So what do people want CAF and AFCON to do? Abolish the biggest football tournament in Africa, equivalent to UEFA just unilaterally cancelling the Euros, or just stop calling up players who play in Europe, thus basically defeating the point of the tournament, and denying those players the opportunity to fulfil a lifetime dream? Of course, the 2022 World Cup was also hosted in the winter. Both the 2026 and 2030 World Cups, which are likely to be held in the summer, will be absolutely brutal in terms of temperatures, and then the 2034 World Cup in Saudi Arabia will almost certainly become a winter tournament at some stage, just as Qatar did, whenever FIFA and the organisers finally admit that it's too hot in June and July. At some point, due to climate change, it will probably become a 50-50 split with World Cups being hosted in the summer and winter. And even the Euros, for some countries like Spain, Portugal, Greece, Turkey, and even parts of Italy, will seriously have to consider rescheduling due to extreme heat. We are approaching a situation, therefore, and arguably it has already begun, in which mid-season international tournaments are going to become the norm, and AFCON will just be one of many. Above all else, though, AFCON fits the African football schedule rather than the European football schedule because, you know, it's an African football competition. European teams use AFCON as vital scouting missions, with African players having become the stars of some of Europe's leading clubs in recent years. It is a slightly bizarre form of hypocrisy, therefore, to complain about AFCON coming around after you've signed those players and they have performed so well for you. The reason all of this narrativization matters and is such a shame, though, is because it means that the media, whether that be legacy or social media, or just football fans themselves, inevitably overlook or miss out on so many fascinating storylines and narratives which go virtually unreported. Stories like Zambia's run to the final of the 1994 AFCON, in which they beat Senegal, Mali and Ivory Coast before narrowly losing in the final against Nigeria, less than a year after their entire squad had been killed in a plane crash in Gabon, South Africa's first and only AFCON crown in 1996, just 2 years after the racist system of apartheid had been smashed, in which Bafana Bafana won as the hosts, with Nelson Mandela in attendance, and, most recently, the Gambia's thrilling run to the quarter-final of the last AFCON in their tournament debuts, following victories against Tunisia and Guinea. The Gambia is a country of fewer than 6 million people, and their squad included 2 free agents at the time, and 2 League 2 players, Ibu Touré and Ibu Adams, from Salford City and Forest Green Rovers. That is one of the many fascinating things about AFCON, the enormous reputational and financial disparities between players, but how they stand for nothing at AFCON. It is, in many ways, football's greatest leveller, an international equivalent of the FA Cup or Coupe de France. And that makes for endless excitement, the unearthing of hidden gems, and the slaying of numerous giants. Samuel Eto'o, who is undoubtedly one of Africa's greatest ever players, had a dreadful record in AFCON knockout games. Didier Drogba, who is famed as almost the ultimate big game player in Europe, cannot escape the fact that he bottled it, so to speak, in 2 AFCON finals with Ivory Coast. And Mohamed Salah comes into this AFCON, age 31, having yet to be the top scorer, best player, or, most importantly, have got his hands on the biggest trophy in African football, having lost 2 finals, despite playing for the most successful country in the history of AFCON, Egypt, who have won a total of 7 crowns. Salah is already the metaphorical king of Egypt, but if he wants to become football's king of Africa, he is most likely going to have to produce something special over the next 3 to 4 weeks. Nonetheless, Egypt are only the 5th favourites. The hosts, Ivory Coast, the holders, Senegal, the 2022 World Cup stars, Morocco, and their North African rivals, Algeria, are all ahead of them, with Cameroon and Nigeria not far behind. So many AFCON squads are littered with stars. Nigeria have a forward line which boasts Samuel Chukwueze, Alex Iwobi, Moses Simon and Victor Osimhen, but come into the tournament in relatively poor form. Ghana can call upon the varied talents of Mohamed Kudus, Inaki Williams and the vastly experienced Ayew brothers. Senegal are capable of naming an entire Premier League midfield of Gueye, Kouyaté and Sarr, bolstered by Ismaïla Sarr, Nicholas Jackson and Sadio Mane in attack. And we are all surely well aware of the talents of this Morocco team by now, with the likes of Bounou, Hakimi, Ziyech and En-Nesyri. And then, once again, you have the minnows. AFCON is a competition which pits Nigeria, a nation of over 200 million people and the economic powerhouses of Africa, led by one of the best centre-forwards on the planet, on the pitch that is, Victor Osimhen isn't their president, against an island country like Cape Verde, with a smaller population than Sheffield, and players like Roberto Lopez of Shamrock Rovers, and Patrick Andrade of Carabao within their ranks. Surely, all of that is much more interesting than a made-up 3-year-old story about an alleged age dispute. And yet, which one have you heard more about over the last few weeks? Anyway, rant over. And I hope that it wasn't just a rant, because my overriding point is that the Africa Cup of Nations is a rich tapestry of colour, culture and, above all else, football. If you love football, I don't know how you couldn't love or not get excited about AFCON. International football is now the purest expression of the beautiful game, and AFCON epitomises almost all that is great about it. Thank you all, as ever, for watching this video. Thanks especially to Astor Cerebron, who can be for apologies also if I'm pronouncing that. Lipura nenge no wapogwa eva tere ulikoni mando tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite opoye ekukulile
Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala. Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendike nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, mura hetatu natu, bali o hetatu matatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, lets you express your constitution.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. And before that commercial break, the piece of content you're listening to gave some context into how something we discussed last week about how we should view AFCON. You know, how's the AFCON story really told, particularly by us here on the continent ourselves? You know, the international media is one thing, almost expected, but how do we, as the true patrons of AFCON, how do we view AFCON? And that was gave some good examples, some good insight into the narrative of AFCON. Don't forget, you can call in at 0832888401, and that's 0832888401. Some updated Premier League news. Tottenham 1, Sunderland 1. Liverpool have also equalized. It is now 1-1 in their fixture against Fulham. New signing of Florian Wirtz with the equalizer for the Reds. It is still 0-0 in the Morocco versus Tunisia fixture at the African Cup of Nations, that is the round of 16. Tunisia playing in the round of 16 for the very first time in the competition. And the hosts, as we know, are there to win it all. Now, something that's probably only going to grow this year, most certainly will grow this year, continue to grow this year, following the immense growth that we've seen from this sector, is that of sports betting. You know, sports betting, it's in your face wherever you go. You can't avoid it. I mean, right now you're listening to the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. It's everywhere. So let's listen to a gentleman who, let's just say, figured out the sports betting sector. A man who is on the very, very, very extreme, rare, almost outlier end of what the sports betting world can do for an individual. Let's take a listen and I'll catch you on the other side of this.
I believe my journey is the same as the journey of any other sports bettor. You begin because you want a better way of making money, or somebody told you sports betting exists. But mine is going to be simple. My first bet was when I was in Form 2 in high school. That is when I placed my first bet. And since then, I've evolved. I've learned. I have been scammed. There was a time when I was in Form 3. My parents had just given me pocket money when we were resuming school. And I was on Telegram looking for sure games. Those days, it used to be a big thing. Big odds, fixed odds. I don't blame those who love big odds today. I was also a lover of big odds back then.
You call them akas, and I watch your YouTube videos.
Now, these were not just akas. Uh-huh. These were fixed matches.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So how many odds?
It was 500 odds. So imagine sparing 500 apart. You buy that. And then you stake 500 Kenyan shillings. How rich I would be. And then he turns up losing. And the funny thing is that those slips lost by the 10th minute. There was one that had a scoreline of 0-0.
I'm sorry.
When we went home, the person was offering VIPs, selling two odds and sure stuff. I decided to pay for it. I paid for it and I was there for around 2 weeks. Bro, it was back-to-back losses.
And then after 2 weeks, I was kicked out of the VIP because I only paid for 2 weeks. I never made money. Tried DMing the person on Telegram. Hey, what happened? Why are you not giving me my games? Nothing really happened. Nothing really happened. But I still see the person still posting till this very date.
So what avenue is this you're talking about, the VIP?
I joined it on Telegram.
Telegram.
A millionaire at 23. Never thought of that. All I knew is that I wanted to be one of the biggest sports bettors, because back then I only knew sports betting as a side hustle. It's the only thing I knew. And so I just wanted to be popular worldwide. No, and a successful sports bettor. That was my intention back then. Yeah. So thinking about being a millionaire back then, by the age of 23, never thought of that. I only knew I wanted to make money and be rich. Yeah. It's not known to people that football is being fixed, but in reality, a lot of games are compromised, especially if you're betting on leagues that are not that advanced. Another thing you must realize, that right now we have the introduction of VAR, really affected football. During my days when I started betting, if a goal was scored, it was a goal.
Oh God.
So winning in betting was easy. And the likes of Manchester United were winning. Manchester United could go ahead and win even with an odd of 1.13. Today you bet on Manchester United with an odd of 1.13, they lose, bro. And that thing has really messed up the betting space. Again, I must say that right now, accumulators still maintains its part in sports betting. It is the best way, even though it is the hardest, but it is still the best way to go ahead and, you know, make it out of sports betting. You need those big odds winning once in a while so that you can get that big money coming back to you. I do refer to myself as the professor of betting. And so there are things only me as a person, I'm the only one who is able to see them when going through the analysis of each and every single game. That is what makes me know that this is a match where you should go big. And believe me, I'm right 99% of the times. I will lose some, but 99% of the times, when I get a game and say that this is a game that is going to win based on the analysis process, because what makes me different with many people is that I have serious analysis processes in place. And people see me posting games on YouTube, they think I just wake up in the morning and spend 4 hours, 2 hours analyzing game. No, bro. I spend close to 8 hours every single day going through all the matches because I love doing it manually. There's technology available. I'm not the best in mathematics. I will admit that. But with a little knowledge I have on mathematics, with a little knowledge I have when it comes to, you know, dealing with computers and writing models for betting, I've done so much. I've done so much. And this is my age in sports betting. Must better. How are you able to grow? How are you able to get views? One thing I must tell you is that I did not open my YouTube channel as a noob. Sorry to say noob, but I did not open my YouTube channel as someone with no information about YouTube. I had prior information when it comes to YouTube, but I lacked the environment to go out and fully exploit this information. So when I was opening this Must Better YouTube channel, what happened is I already knew how to set up a YouTube channel.
Okay.
And I'd learned a few things about YouTube SEO and YouTube optimization, things like that. So the very first time I created the YouTube channel, believe me when I tell you this, I had 1,000 subscribers in the very first day. Now, there are also challenges when it came to that. I applied for monetization 6 times, got rejected all the 6 times.
Why?
Because it's the first time I'm doing this. There was no clear statements that were indicating when you're doing sports betting content, this is how you're supposed to structure your content so that you are monetized. That is why I was being rejected. Every time I apply for monetization, I'm told, you are rejected. And then YouTube blatantly, without clearly stating one of the reasons, they just tell you that you're not accepted. So it's up to you to go back again, delete all the videos and start again. Okay, I am the biggest. I am the biggest when it comes to betting tips on YouTube. Anything you search about related to betting, I'm there. And that only goes ahead to prove one thing. When it comes to YouTube optimization, I know what I'm doing. And I'm in YouTube so that I can fully exploit what YouTube presents to young people so that they can make money. Many people view YouTube and think YouTube is a platform whereby you go and post videos, get views, get viral, get AdSense money and stop at that point. No. That is wrong. I view YouTube as something special.
Special. Yeah.
Sports betting teaches you a lot. Teaches you to maintain sanity, teaches you to be relaxed, teaches you to be composed, disciplined, not to overreact when you're winning, not to overreact when you're losing. So that is why I'm able to be chill. Yeah.
So
there was a time my brother was actively seeking sports betting as a way of making money. That was after he finished high school, because he saw John Salvo, his brother, has made it, so he thought he can also make it.
So he was taking or giving YouTube videos?
Nah, he was betting, manually betting. And I looked at him and said, bro, do you really understand what you're betting? You're a football fan, but that doesn't mean you're supposed to be betting. And it was a problem convincing him and telling him, this is not the way to polo. This is not the way you're supposed to be going after. If you want to make money online, go learn something else. Luckily for me, he wasn't that stubborn. But I tried my best to convince him, just to sell him that betting is a wrong thing. It is a bad thing.
Did he stop?
Finally stopped. If you tell me you lost $10,000 from my tips, I'm going to feel bad. $10,000 is a lot of money, bro. And if you give me $10,000 to invest in my betting account, let me tell you, bro, I'm going to make so much money from that. I'm sure I'm going to be able to turn 50%. Like, if you give me $10,000, I'll be able to give you back $8,000 or maybe $5,000 in profit by the end of the month.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh. This is interesting, because this is the very first time I'm going to mention this. And if you ask me what else I do, I'll give you the most easy to understand. I do YouTube. I'm a YouTuber. I run YouTube businesses. I have a team that creates videos on YouTube. Videos whereby I'm not the face. I'm sharing my knowledge, teaching other people how to do YouTube. And it pays well. It pays better than sports betting.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. Right now, I'm actively coaching.
Coaching YouTube?
Actively coaching fellow youth, youngings, on how to make money online. So that is why people always say, at times I disappear from YouTube for maybe 2 days and tell my guys, okay, guys, I'm held up. It is because I've been hired privately to teach somebody. And when I put my time into something, I want to ensure that you get out with some knowledge. So I am a teacher. I'm a professor. I'm a professor. And in sports betting, I'll teach you. Though I don't have many students on sports betting, I rarely share my secrets. But from today, I think this is when I'm going to be coming up with the ability to teach others. If you want to be good in sports betting, if you want to make money through sports betting, I will be coming up with something known as Must Better Inner Circle.
Inner Circle.
Inner Circle, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so through that, you will be able to learn how to be like me, how to make money like me, how to win from sports betting. You can go Google on your phone, search for johnsalvo.com. My site will come up and you'll be able to work with me. I'll personally now mentor you on things like creating money through YouTube. Yeah. The biggest amount of money I've lost from sports betting, I will say it's $8,000. $8,000.
Almost a million Kenyan shillings.
Almost a million Kenyan shillings. You know, I had to begin with the bad one so that people understand how heavy this is. Yeah. So that even when I say that the biggest amount of money I've won from a bet, it was a single bet. And the single bet made me $6,000. That is roughly 600,000 Kenyan shillings. I'm working with an exchange rate of 100 probably. It's one of the losses that I look back into and I really feel the pain of it. But again, I think it was important that I lose that money. Yeah. Just to answer the question, it was as a result of chasing one losing bet. And the funny thing is, I tell you, I started by chasing a loss of 200 Kenyan shillings, ended up losing that amount of money.
From 200 Kenyan shillings to 800,000 Kenyan shillings.
Yeah. And when I look back to those days, my mother couldn't really understand what was going on, because I was still staying with my mom. But luckily, bro, I had money. I was making real money from betting.
What is the biggest amount you had in your account then?
Okay, I won't say the biggest amount was in my account, but the biggest amount I had back then was in my crypto account, Bitcoin.
Oh,
I was holding money. So I had close to 2.4 million in Bitcoin.
And you're staying in your mom's house?
Yeah. I touched my first 1 million Kenyan shillings at the age of 19. I'm not a lover of physical, but my friends do tell me that I should get into the physical world, because the online world is risky. But bro, what else is risk if you bet? What can be risk? What else can be risky more than betting? Nothing. So, betting is the most risky activity to do. Yeah. And I still do it, so I'm not afraid.
Has betting taught you anything?
It taught me discipline. It taught me that, bro, you might be the best, but really, you're not in control of your fate.
Wow.
Yeah. There's always somebody more powerful in control. And that applies to life too. If you life, you might think you're in control of your life, but there's a powerful force in control of your life. I won't say it's God, because people believe in different forces. if you're talking about physical, I'm not that much into showing, like, flexing or, like, portraying to people that I'm really having the money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's actually recently, that is last year, that I've embraced that, okay, I'm young, I'm supposed to be living life, mm-hmm. and I'm in the process of purchasing. Before the end of the year, I'm going to have another addition. So you just need to watch out. There's another addition coming up, some physical stuff that everyone will be able to see.
Show me your ways. Because,
wow, easy. Mm-hmm. But to the normal person, I want them to understand that if they really want to get to this million, mm-hmm. then they should listen carefully. You see? So, for me to be able to purchase these, you know, I never purchased it on higher purchase like others do, like, or rented it. I hate the fact whereby you have to rent. So, everything I own is bought.
Cash.
And I did not take it, like, let me say, I did not spend my entire money on it.
What do you mean you did not? Whose money? Your parents?
Let me say right now, if I check my Bitcoin account, I have 6 million Kenyan shillings, yeah? That is what is available in my Bitcoin account. So, I do not go ahead and spend, let me say, the 6 million account on, like, the 6 million in my account purchasing a car or purchasing my house. You see, what I do is wait until it accumulates to a point. I have 20 million now, yeah? So, what happens when I have 20 million? I decide to take, okay, let me spend the 5 million on purchasing my car. Let me spend the 4 million on purchasing my house. That is how I do it. It is a broader topic. The topic of how to manage your money properly in sports betting is one that, if we start talking about it, because, you know, my state is different from your state, from somebody else's state. That is what is happening on the Mass Better YouTube channel. So I cannot generalize everyone. I have to approach it bit by bit. If your stake is at this range, this is what you're supposed to do. If your stake is at this range, this is what you're supposed to do. But just to give a blanket insight, if you really want to grow your money and maybe get to the point where you're able to stake big, then exploit bonuses that are provided by sites like 1xbet, 22bet, Melbet, and their clone versions. It's easy to get relaxed. Bro, let me tell you, like, those moments have been there. But what makes me to keep being the person I am, the John Salvo is grinding back to back, I still need to retire my parents. There are so many things I need to do for my community, my relatives. You see, right now I tell you, there are people who I pay fees for. I tell you, there are people who I'm helping back at home. It's so much, you know, being an African and being rich and getting to the millions young is really a tough thing. Because the money is yours. At the same time, you have to share it with others. You have to uplift others too. Because that is why it's a given ability. It's a gift. I view it as a gift. God has given you the gift. So it is your responsibility to go ahead and uplift others too. Especially those closer to you and those dear to you. The West, that I want to say that right now, this is when betting is getting intense in the West. And what they bet on is very funny. There are sites like Stake. Stake is the most prominent betting site known to, I think, those in USA and most Europeans. I do see their live betting streams. It's only Stake. But you come to Africa, we prefer betting on football and soccer. But the Europeans, they prefer betting on games and casinos and stuff, because Las Vegas, that is one of the biggest betting points in, or gambling points in the West. Yeah. So for us, we really care about things that we have more control of and things that are easily accessible. For Kenya today, for example, the betting culture has really evolved. We have things like mobile money.
Win big, win now with Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Get a 200% sports bonus of up to 2,000 Namibian dollars. Sign up now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And you place a bet instantly, courtesy to the likes of Safaricom, Airtel. In fact, if Safaricom and Airtel never existed, I would not have become a sports better because the restrictions that were there for you to access a betting site were really limited. You only need a phone number, which you don't need to own. You can use anyone's and you still place a bet. Yeah. But it's a point whereby, moving forward, I will be incorporating betting tips and real ways to make money online. Because the reason why you're betting is to make money. But if there is a safer way of making money online, then you need to know that. Unless, if you do not need, if you don't want to know that, then you're not supposed to be betting. I have a book.
The Pipeline or?
No, it's just the first book I've written. Secret Tales from the Masked Better.
Secret Tales.
Yeah. I have a lot of secrets to share, a lot of stories to share. And I've always thought of a way. If there is a way I'm supposed to monetize my audience, I'm not going to opt for a VIP. I'm not going to opt for the normal things tipsters do. I'm the Masked Better special. There's some speciality attached to the name. I have built a community. I'm not going to sell you probability. I'm going to sell you something that is guaranteed. And so when I'm offering you my book, you're going to get secret tales from the Masked Better. At the same time, you're going to also be able to access my insider inner circle. So that is how I've structured it. It's a lifetime access. Yeah.
Lifetime access. So once someone purchases...
Once you purchase the book, you have lifetime access to my inner circle, which I'll personally send you.
So basically...
Yeah, so instead of just sharing betting tips and not knowing exactly the processes involved when sharing these betting tips, I now get to be with you. And I've made it my decision that every Tuesday, every Wednesday, I'll be having live call sessions with members of the Mass Beta Circle. Because people have always wanted to reach out to me. But I never allow anyone to contact me on my private time. There are so many people inside my Instagram, inside my WhatsApp, inside my Telegram telling me, Mass Beta, I want to reach you out. Mass Beta, I want to talk to you. But they don't know I'm not just the better they see on YouTube. I'm a busy man running other businesses behind the scene. So you can't get my time for free. But now this time round, with the Mass Beta Inner Circle, you get to have access with me every Wednesday. Yeah. Most of the people watching Mass Beta are aged between 18 to 29. That is why I think it's high time I tell them, hey young fella, hey my younger bro, hey my young sis, sports betting is not the only way to make money online. There are other avenues. You've tried sports betting, it might not have worked for you, but sports bettors are losing money so much every single month. If somebody is taking $5 in a month, they're losing roughly $150 in a month, and they don't stop.
$5 betting. $5 in a day,
they're losing that is roughly $150 in a day, in a month, yeah? And the funny thing is that the next month they still be betting. Bettors are addicted to the game. They're addicted to the highs of betting and the lows of betting. They'll cry today, tomorrow they laugh, they're still in the game. So, if you are able to spare the $150 and put it into something productive, then believe me, bro, you'll make it. Because for you to also get successful in sports betting, you need to be funded. You need to make money. There are people who funded my sports betting, bro. There are people who funded my betting journey. So they trusted me. Not just because they trusted me for the sake of trusting me. I proved to them that I can actually make them more money. So they could lend me like 30,000 Kenyan shillings, and then I returned them maybe 5,000 on top.
Oh, so yeah. Profit.
Yeah. And these are the things that forced me to be profitable. Because if I never got to be profitable, how was I going to pay them? But there was a time I was in debt, complete debt. They lent me money and I lost everything and I was negative 292,000 Kenyan shillings in debt. That was before I just joined campus, you see. That was some time before I joined campus. But what happened? COVID came and COVID was my secret window. Bro, we were home for 2 years. 2 years.
That is from campus.
Yeah. And that is the time frame whereby the story really changed. And, you know, the funny thing with me, when you're a sports better, your story is going to be a story of ups and downs. So if you're not really careful and you're not thinking from a broader perspective, you'll find that you'll turn 30 and you're still betting. Of course, I'll turn 30 and I'll still bet because I love betting, not because I have to bet to make a living. Today, many of my bets, I do them because I am a tipster. I am the Masked Better. If I stop betting, I will forget what it feels like to be the better. Yeah, and
see the result.
When I bet, I also get to have the pressure that every sports better has. And I do feel that the day I stop feeling the pressure is the day I should stop posting betting tips and stop giving predictions. Because that means that I have stopped caring officially and I'm just posting for the sake of making money or for the sake of misleading people. Something I do not intend to do. Telling my fans, telling my followers, telling my family that this is only bets based on data is a lie. a majority of my betting success is from instincts. And how do you get to be someone who is good? How do you get to be good with the instincts? It's through daily repetition of the game. There are days in 2019, in 2020, in 2021, where I was spending close to 12 to 20 hours every single day betting.
That is like all day.
Yeah. And I think what really helped me back then was my mom hated betting. She really hated it.
All moms.
And of course she hated it, but at the end of the day, she was still my mom. You see, bro, like it's late at night, maybe 4 p.m., not eating the whole day. She comes, hey, come go eat. At least come go eat. And like really, if she wasn't really supportive, but that little intent of, you know, that just, at least the room was there. At least the space was there. At least the space was there. At times I used to lie, I'm having an online class. But there's no online class. Of course we used to have online classes. I used to dodge online classes just to bet. And I'm glad that it finally paid off. When I was doing that, my friends used to think I was the foolish one. And I hated it when each friend of mine was telling me that, John Salvo, you need to go finish your degree. One thing most better people don't know, like what those watching this video right now, is that I'm a university dropout. I have dropped out of the university. I haven't completed, not officially dropped out, but I dropped out of university.
Dropped out at what stage?
The reason why I dropped out is because I found school to be boring. You can't tell me, bro, that by a single bet, I made 100,000 Kenyan shillings, and then I'm supposed to sit on a class that I get paid 80,000 Kenyan shillings per month. The maths was not adding up. So that is why I failed attending classes. Till this very date, I'm still being told, you need to go finish your degree again. But let me tell you, betting is something that promises hope to many people. Because many people don't get to master it. But they continue betting because of hope. They don't bet because they're making profit. They bet because they hope one day we are going to win. There are advertisements paraded everywhere that somebody won a jackpot 250 million Kenyan shillings. So this is what is keeping people hooked to the betting. So it's not the best one. But because people are doing it, I have to be here to guide them. The second one is something like forex trading. An easy one. I don't understand it. So I'm not going to talk about it. All I know is that it is a risky venture. And there are others that are available. Writing, so many, copywriting, there are challenges. You're an African. When you call an American or when you call somebody from UK, they instantly get the African accent. Bro, they stop trusting you and they hang up on you. I've gone through that so many nights. When you're trying to call up someone, you call someone and trying to close them.
They realize you're African and then they abandon the altar.
Yes, those are still risky. But now there's a solution, YouTube. And that is why I fully embraced YouTube. Now with YouTube, no one is going to judge you. There's no face, there's nothing there. They only care about the content, they only care about entertainment. And when you give them what they want, they stick. So to any person, young person trying to make money online, YouTube is unknown to many. It's just getting bigger this year. In fact, it's been there. There's this person known as Matt Parr. If you go on YouTube, you'll see him. He has many followers. He's the person who made me learn YouTube at first.
Matt?
Matt Parr is a young guy. I used to love his life. You know, I used to love his life. And he was teaching YouTube. I applied his concepts. But with his concepts, I got rejected for monetization 6 months. But at least I learned something from him. Now today, it's easier. And the reason why it's easy is because creators like me, YouTubers like me, Africans like me have done it. Anyone can go ahead and do it, especially the Africans or anyone from any third world country can go ahead and give YouTube a try. So this is the online skill I recommend for anyone.
Question and ask you a few questions.
There are two things I want to mention. And the first one is going to be general advice for my sports betting community. In sports betting, making it is possible. If you're going to make it in sports betting, you must embrace discipline. You must embrace patience. And you must be willing to sacrifice. I see many people doing sports betting and they do it for the sake of betting, just following tipsters randomly selecting games. And they do not put genuine desire to go ahead and learn what sports betting is. When I started betting, I wasn't a football fan. And some of them will be shocked today when I say that I still don't understand so much logistics around football. And I'm not really a football fan. I hate watching matches. Why? Because most of my time is spent on doing other activities, but I still win. And the reason why I'm able to win is because I understand the patterns game. I understand the patterns game. I view betting as a game of patterns. And so my betting approach is different. You might be the best in football, but but you might be the worst bettor. And this, I mention it every single time. I really hate sports betting pundits. They'll be telling you Manchester United is going to win because player A, player B, player C. And then when the game plays, people like me, they're the ones cashing out. So don't just follow people blindly. Get to develop your own systems if you're going to win in sports betting. That is how you get to make money. Betting has made me so much, and I thank betting for that. Betting has taught me so much, and I'm never stopping betting. And then the second thing I'm going to mention is this. As a sports bettor, you need other sources of income, because you're going to need to fund your betting lifestyle. If I was taking $50, or let me say 50 bob, that is $0.5, I wouldn't be here today. Most of my stakes ranges between $200 to $1,000 per game, depending on how sure I am on the game. For you to get this $200 to $1,000, if you really want to continue betting, which job is going to give you the ability to do that? No job. But there is an opportunity. There's something known as YouTube. So if you're serious enough about getting to improve your betting game, then you need to visit my site, johnsalvo.com, and you get to be a part. Learn the YouTube game. I know it's going to be hard in the beginning. There is nothing easy. That has been one of the things I've emphasized on this conversation today. But because you really want to make it, we are sports bettors. We are risk takers. This is not taking risk. It's something I've personally done. It's a script you're going to follow that I've given you. All you need to do is put in the work. So if you are serious enough, then you need to check it out. It's come to a point whereby the world is changing. And when the world is changing, then even the creators, even those who are actively leading in given jurisdictions of life, different domains in life, we must change. And the change calls for people like me, must better, to fully unveil themselves and say, hey, when they must better, there is another person.
So the human side of you.
Yeah.
Which football team do you support?
Liverpool.
Who is the best player in the world?
Ronaldo.
Why not Messi?
Bro, I love Ronaldo.
So it's love.
Okay, I love the CR7. I've learned a lot
the brand.
From him, yeah.
Okay. Who is your favorite player?
Salah.
Why? Because you're a Liverpool fan or because he's African?
I can't explain. I just love Salah. There is a time when Liverpool, he wore the shirt, never give up. Bro, that day has stuck up with, it stuck with me. Because never give up. It was a point in my story whereby things were tough. And so they never give up, Salah wearing it. Bro, like, it's iconic. One of my best moments in football is that moment. I don't know, it was in 2019, 2020. Can't really recall. Yeah.
Which leagues would you prefer someone to bet on? Top three.
England, France. Come on, I said France. England, Italy, Germany.
What about Spain?
Spain is a league where there's so many draws and 0-0 scorelines and 1-1 scorelines. I don't love it.
Afternoon, early kickoff or late kickoff when it comes to betting?
Late kickoff for live bets. And then if you're going to bet on pre-match, do not go for early kickoff.
Championship or Premier League?
Premier League.
Corners or both teams to score?
Both teams to score.
Why?
Corners is inconsistent of late, unless you're going to be betting on it live.
Akers or single stake?
Both.
Both.
I've embraced Akers of late.
Uh-huh.
And I think that this is one of the season whereby I'm going to win some massive odd. Since I started betting...
When life gives you an unexpected experience...
How must I afford a new phone now?
Take control with Express Credit. Get reliable relief when you need it most. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars. Repayable over 2 to 5 months. Apply for a quick cash loan. Easy application. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or call 90,000.
Lipura nengeno wapogwa eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bari heali nola natu heali bari no heali. Ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bari o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM VI.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future. Eagle FM.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone, brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Update in the Morocco versus Tanzania fixture. It is still 0-0 in that knockout fixture of the 2025 African Cup of Nations. It is now the 55th minute. Don't forget Bafana. Bafana will be in action at 9 p.m. against Cameroon. Liverpool's match against Fulham ended in a 2-2 draw, with Harrison Reed scoring a 97th minute equalizer for Fulham after Cody Gakpo took the lead in the 94th minute for Liverpool. So dramatic ending in the Liverpool fixture rather. And that leaves Liverpool in fourth place on the 34 points. Manchester City ahead of them in third place on 41, and Manchester United behind them in fifth place on 31 points. Real Madrid's match with Real Betis ended 5-1 with Gonzalo Garcia scoring a hat-trick, Fran Garcia adding a fifth, as well as Raul Asensio on the score sheet for Los Blancos. Now we'll go into a brief musical break before we get back into the final third of the show, where we're gonna talk about something rather heavy, let's put it like that. But first, let's take a short musical break where we will hear from none other than Mr. Jimmy Cliff.
Jump, jump.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you...
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. Update in the Morocco-Tanzania fixture. It is now 1-0 for Morocco. Brahim Diaz, who has been a shining light in this tournament for the Moroccans, the young, well, not so young anymore, but the Real Madrid player, excelling well at this tournament, and he has put the host in the lead. It is now 1-1, 67 minutes played. If anything else to change, I will update you, of course, in that fixture. Manchester City versus Chelsea kicking off right about now. If anything changes in that fixture, I will keep you up to date as per usual. But now, to close off the show, let's listen to a piece about, there's much talk, and rightfully so, about all the things that are possible for when it comes for a young boy or girl on the continent that has major football dreams, and these dreams are of playing football in the best place in the world that there is to play football, and that is Europe. You know, millions of young people have this dream. But now we're going to take a listen to what it looks like, or what it sounds like, rather, when this dream really turns into a nightmare. It's something that maybe not all of us that are listening are aware of. So let's dive right into that and discuss it briefly on the other side.
And those who are supposed to keep you safe.
When he selected me to join the youth national team, I was proud. At the same time, I was very afraid.
Turn out to be the ones who abuse you.
C'est devenu tellement naturel même pour ces enfants qu'il faut qu'ils s'abusent de toi ou pour que tu joues dans son équipe.
And football stops being a game.
Plusieurs centaines d'enfants auraient été abusés et des personnalités de la Fédération Gabonaise de football seraient impliquées.
When I think about what really happened, it makes me want to throw up. I was abused. I was harassed. I was violated without my consent.
Children get abused in football. Everybody knows.
Donc tout le monde savait et tout le monde a décidé de fermer les yeux.
Voilà, on regarde, on voit, on dit rien. Comment il peut être incarcéré et continuer à gérer une fédération d'un pays? Je remonte cette responsabilité à la FIFA.
There are not many worse things in life, not in football life, but in life generally, than child abuse.
But has FIFA ripped up its own rule book in Gabon? Gabon, on the west coast of Central Africa, a country where the lives of countless young players have been devastated in what could be the biggest sexual abuse scandal the world of football has ever seen. This is Parfendon, A man who risked everything to reveal the horrors of a scandal that has rocked African football. In the 1990s, he was a star player for Gabon, selected 45 times to play for his country. The striker played most of his professional career in Europe, before injury forced him to quit and he became a coach in Switzerland. In 2019, he returned home to Gabon and set up his own football academy.
Allez la pioche, go!
J'avais cette envie de vouloir rentrer chez moi au Gabon, parce que je me disais ce que j'étais en train d'apprendre ou transmettre aux petits Européens, je pouvais bien le faire aussi chez moi. Et je pense que je peux être 10 fois mieux chez moi.
Recule!
Alors mon retour définitif, il s'est très mal passé parce que après plus de 20 ans hors du Gabon, je connaissais plus beaucoup de monde dans le milieu du foot. Tout avait changé.
And the changes, says Parfait, were shocking. He discovered that sexual abuse of young players at all levels of Gabonese football was rife, and he claims that warning signs were being ignored. In 2018, Chivan Zigou, a former star striker for the Gabonese international team, went public about the sexual abuse he himself had faced during his career.
Que je ne pouvais que dénoncer. Je pouvais pas le garder au moins. Parce que j'ai aussi des enfants, les raisons pour lesquelles j'ai des enfants.
Parfait says he took his concerns to the highest powers in Gabonese football.
J'ai fait, moi, toutes les étapes qu'il y avait à faire. J'ai parlé au président de la Ligue. J'ai parlé au président de la fédération. J'ai été voir le ministre des Sports. J'ai même fait une demande pour voir le premier ministre du Gabon à l'époque. Mais les quatre personnes, personne n'a voulu m'écouter.
In desperation, Parfait turned to local media.
Moi, j'ai fait plusieurs interventions dans plusieurs télévisions, plusieurs radios au Gabon. Hein. Sans suite, personne n'a pris en considération ce que je disais.
Then, in December 2021, everything changed. A British newspaper, The Guardian, named several leading figures in Gabonese football alleged to have sexually abused hundreds of boys over a period of decades. Finally, the story was out, and more players decided to go public. One of them was Brice Makaya, a former international player and youth coach, who said he had been ignored.
Oui, parce que moi j'ai été à l'intérieur de ce système et j'ai dénoncé à plusieurs fois. J'ai dénoncé même auprès du bureau fédéral à plusieurs fois.
Within weeks of the scandal erupting, 4 coaches were arrested and 3 remain in prison since. At the heart of the most damaging allegations was the coach Patrick Assoumou Ehi, widely known by his nickname Capello. For decades, he was the head coach of Gabon's national youth teams. Crucially, Capello had the power to decide who would be selected to play for the country on the international stage and who wouldn't.
Il avait quasiment la position d'un dieu, parce que tout le monde l'adulait. Les responsables de centres de formation, des académies, tout le monde voyait Capello comme le dieu.
Capello admitted charges of raping, grooming and exploiting young players and remains in prison awaiting sentencing. The other arrested coaches deny the allegations made against them. While making this film, we spoke to more than 30 witnesses. They told us about a culture of sexual abuse entrenched in Gabonese football. Most of them were too afraid to testify. Actors revoiced their testimony to protect their identities, and names have also been changed. Julien played for Gabon's national team for several years.
One time, me and another player were having a shower. That's when I saw Capello. He was watching us. He had his hands down his trousers. I got really scared. He started to contact me obsessively, calling every day, sometimes late at night, and sending me sexual messages. I was just 14 at the time. I was terrified. The harassment never stopped. From the day I joined his team until the day I left Gabon, that was about 3 years. He kept calling me, even when I was abroad.
Alexis climbed through the youth ranks of the Gabonese game and went on to play in Europe.
In Gabon, football and pedophilia go hand in hand. We are all told their stories. People will openly say this or that guy is a pedophile. We will make jokes about it. Make sure you don't go into the showers with so and so. We're laughing like it was normal.
Another victim described Capello as a monster. His harrowing testimony was shared with us.
We were at a football training camp for the under-17 selection team. We were staying in a dorm, like soldiers in bunk beds. They would come into our rooms in the middle of the night and... Sorry, it's hard to talk about. They would come into our rooms and I saw the boys being taken away. They didn't have a choice. When they came back, I could tell they couldn't sleep. While we were training for the selection games, those boys were passing blood in the toilets and showers. We could see blood coming out of their palms. They could not play during the next game. They couldn't run anymore. I didn't understand what was going on, but nobody would talk about it. On the fourth night of the camp, they came to wake me and my best friend. They took us to a room with red lights. It was full of naked men. One of them was Capello. I have forgotten the names of the others. They started touching me and my friend, and I just didn't understand. I wanted to scream. They told me I should masturbate them and give them a blowjob. I refused. So then they threatened me, saying that if I didn't do it, I would lose my place in the team. I would be left on the bench until the end of the tournament. I was so shocked. I didn't find any words to speak. All I had left were tears. I saw how they started to wreck my friend. I looked him in the eye. He looked back at me, seemed to say, let's just go along with them and get it over with. I started to pray and pray. And then I got up. I wanted to get up, but the door was locked. They grabbed me and threw me onto the floor. There were two security men. It was like they were prepared for this. I tried to fight them off, but they forced me to masturbate them and give them a blowjob. I told them I couldn't do it. I cried and screamed and screamed and screamed until they had finished with my friend. They let him go and they told me I would never be selected to play ever again, and that if I dared to speak to anyone about what happened, my family would be killed.
Rémi Ebanega is a former Gabon international. In 2014, he set up the country's first professional football players' union. The former defender says he has several friends who were abused by coaches. He believes he avoided abuse because of his family connections and a childhood spent living outside Libreville. He told us how specific words were used to indicate abuse.
Capello lui-même le disait, pour jouer dans ma sélection, il faut avoir la présence d'esprit. Ça devenait tellement banal que nous on en rigolait même, étant jeune, sans comprendre, sans connaître la profondeur de la chose, quoi, en disant que mais l'état d'esprit là, c'est quoi exactement? Mais c'est plus tu grandis, plus tu te rends compte que mais c'est compliqué parce que la présence d'esprit dont on parle, c'est qu'il faut que ben tu passes par Capello, il faut qu'il couche avec l'enfant pour lui donner la présence d'esprit pour qu'il soit bon. C'était ça le truc.
Le mot fétiche de Capello était la présence d'esprit. Pour un enfant, c'est comme l'arbre de Noël. Ce garçon voit un futur Ronaldo. Il voit en train de se faire miroiter quelque chose. Donc, il peut pas refuser. Et ça a été dégueulasse. Très, très dégueulasse. C'est vraiment méchant.
We were staying at a hotel the day before an important international game with the junior national team. There were three coaches there. Capello asked if I was a believer.
I told him I was not, because I don't go to church. He said I was missing something and that I needed a spiritual father to give me presence of mind. He said they could see when I played football that I was empty inside. I did not understand what he meant. I thought he wanted me to get baptized. I was very confused. He then told me, you can get the presence of mind when a man like myself sleeps with you, like you will sleep with a woman. All of a sudden, I realized that I was alone in a room with three men, and I started to shake. I was so much afraid. Capello then told me that it would not take very long, that there were three of them in the room, and they'll each have a go with me, and that it will not hurt. He said that I would always be selected to play for the national team afterwards, and that other players in my team had done it too, including my friend whom I was sharing the room with. They kept trying to convince me. I was so confused, and to be honest, I was tempted to agree with them, but I was afraid. I'd never been with a woman before, and I didn't really know what they were talking about. I was trembling and very sweaty. I told them I wasn't refusing to do anything, but that since this was some kind of baptism, I would have to ask my mother first. One of them massaged my shoulders and said, "Little brother, you are a good player. What are you afraid of?" I was shaking, shaking. I still get goosebumps talking about it. I didn't know where the idea came from. It just dawned on me to tell them that I wanted to use the toilet. They were hesitant at first, but one of them said they should just let me go and come back. And I went back to my room. I couldn't look my roommate in the eyes. I went to the bathroom and I didn't leave the room again. And they never came to call me back.
Ethimbo jo matango manene, ethimbo jo matarerepo, ethimbo jo kuhangana, no kuchapula pamwe na holike yetu. Ihesha simana unene, dika ojo ethimbo jo kuyutha kwa mpango dho mwonjira. Kona akona o matayera goye, imangira mepaya joe, kinga wali kuhiyo dungo, kinga ondaponji yuthwa, eto ende inukeka. Ninga shoka sho mwonjira, eto kupitha o umwenyo, ethimbo ondika jo matango o manene.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
You see, our mind is not just an organ. It is the center of our destiny. The very source of the thoughts.
Les ballons durent trop en l'air. Les ballons sont trop haut. On m'est tendu. Ça dure trop en haut. Ça fait deux jours. Le défenseur a le temps de réfléchir.
As more allegations of abuse surfaced, Bafé became more determined than ever to create a safe space for Gabon's emerging talent.
Le 6, le numéro 6, là, il est arrivé chez moi, il avait 4 ans.
4 ans?
Il a 13 ans.
Ça te fait quoi de voir tous ces petits garçons jouer ici, tout en sachant qu'ils sont en sécurité avec toi?
Les voir jouer avec moi et puis surtout bien jouer, c'est un plaisir. Et je sens qu'ils sont en sécurité. Je suis heureux. Alors si tout le monde pouvait leur donner cette chance de cette façon, ce serait fantastique.
But instead, over the past decades, countless boys were left unprotected.
To talk about skill, I don't know how many coaches were abusing boys. But for one moment, let's take a look at Capello alone. He is the most well-known, and he has been doing this for 25 or 30 years. Every year, he had access to at least 50 boys, if not more. So calculate that, that's 50 times 30. And that is just one person. Now let's consider how many other people were part of that network. Coaches, assistant coaches, and club leaders. We are talking about thousands of boys.
So they arrested Capello. But how long have they known and not done anything about it? They stopped at the lowest level. It goes all the way to the top, but they will do anything to cover it up. Capello is a scapegoat. It is the heads at the top that should be rolling.
According to all the witnesses we spoke, they believe more perpetrators are still at large and not enough has been done to protect children in the future.
Je ne comprends toujours pas pourquoi certains sont en prison et d'autres sont en liberté. Ça, je comprends pas.
Moi, je pense que si ce système-là a perduré, et je pense qu'il perdure encore parce qu'il n'y a rien qui a changé, les enfants sont toujours exposés. Et si rien ne se fait, ben, ce seront encore des générations qui vont prendre des coups.
Rémy's Union in Gabon is part of FIFPRO, the global union for professional football players.
So when the story broke, two lines of investigation were working in parallel. You have the one being led by the state of Gabon and the one being led on the football side by FIFA. And this is a different type of investigation to suspend them from football activities. So it's not criminal, it's only football related.
The federation in charge of running Gabonese football is called FIGAFOOT. It is financially supported by FIFA, the governing body of world football, and falls under FIFA's code of ethics, which includes FIFA's child safeguarding policy that states, safeguarding children is everyone's responsibility, regardless of the country we are from or the role we hold in football. It also mentions that when child abuse allegations surface, taking no action is not an option. But did football's governing bodies fail in their duty of care to victims of Gabon's football abuse scandal? Following the international revelations, Pierre-Alain Mugengi, FIGAFOOT's president, was accused of turning a blind eye to years of abuse.
Monsieur le président de la fédération, on vous accuse d'avoir gardé le silence. Est-ce le cas?
Bien, je crois que c'est des accusations fortuites. La fédération n'a pas gardé le silence. La fédération n'a pas voulu communiquer comme ça se passe aujourd'hui dans les réseaux sociaux et autres. Mais nous sommes passés dans l'action. Je disais tantôt que nous avons saisi la commission d'éthique de la fédération qui a ouvert une enquête.
As the scandal broke, FIFA trusted FIGAFOOT to investigate its own people. Critics say this left victims even more vulnerable.
Ça pousse les jeunes à ne pas parler, mais ça ne sert à rien. C'est comme si on allait dans la gueule du loup.
Because the same people that may be accused are those calling the shots, especially when the coach, Mr. Capello, has been employed by the federation.
The only reason I can speak to you is because I am no longer in Gabon. Those who are still there cannot testify. Their lives are in danger. They will be targeted afterwards. I know so many who have been abused, who have been raped, who will never testify, never.
Despite calls for his resignation, Mugengi remained in charge of FIGAFOOT in the months that followed the arrest of Coach Capello and three others. Then, in April 2022, Mugengi was re-elected as president of FIGAFOOT.
I believe that Mr. Mugengi should have been suspended before the re-election took place. On balance, the severity of the alleged cover-up should have triggered an automatic suspension, temporary suspension, before the election.
Almost 3 weeks after his re-election, Mugengi was arrested by Gabonese authorities on the charge of failing to report crimes of pedophilia.
Pierre-Alain Mugengi n'est pas un ami. Pour moi, c'est un frère. C'était. Il n'est plus. C'était un frère. Parce que j'avais de l'estime et du respect pour la personne. Mais il m'a dit en face qu'il m'a jamais vu dans son bureau lui dire ce qui se passait dans le milieu du football. Mais c'est, même si je ne lui ai pas dit, c'est un menteur. C'est un menteur. Parce que quand il prend la fédération, il y a l'affaire d'Nzigou. Après l'explosion de l'affaire d'Nzigou Chiva, l'ancien footballeur, qu'est-ce qu'il a fait comme mesure? Qu'est-ce qu'il a mis en place?
I believe that when it comes to Mr. Mugenge's responsibility, you can look at it in two ways. Either he's incompetent, because he should know what's happening in Gabonese football as president of the federation, or he's guilty of having covered years of abuse for not acting after having received serious reports of what was happening.
With the president of FIGAFOOT in prison, all eyes were on FIFA. Its child safeguarding policy states, suspending a staff member from his or her duties while an external investigation takes place should be standard practice.
La justice locale a incarcéré le président de la fédération et la FIFA n'a rien fait. Pourquoi on ne l'a pas également suspendu en attendant de mener l'enquête comme ça a été le cas avec Capello? Bien étant en prison, il a continué à gérer la fédération. Je ne sais pas si ça existait ailleurs.
I think it's a messed up situation. Some of the key people are still in place and still have a lot of power.
Instead of sanctioning Mugengi following his arrest, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, who are part of FIFA, sent a letter to the Gabonese sports minister questioning his imprisonment. And a few months later, the president of CAF, Patrice Motsepe, visited Mugengi while he was still in prison in Gabon.
CAF's actions could be perceived as political.
Of African football, CAF, who are part of FIFA, sent a letter to the Gabonese sports minister questioning his imprisonment. And a few months later, the president of CAF, Patrice Motsepe, visited Mugenge while he was still in prison in Gabon.
CAF's actions could be perceived as political interference.
I know a lot of players were abused. If those boys see the president of CAF, supported by FIFA, comes to Gabon to visit Mugenge in prison, but doesn't speak one word in support of victims about what is happening, what should they make of that? How should they feel? It is horrible.
After almost 6 months in prison, in October 2022, Mugenge was provisionally released while investigations are still ongoing. And just 3 weeks later, at the opening of the FIFA World Cup in Qatar, Mugenge was pictured hugging CAF's president, Patrice Motsepe, with Gianni Infantino, the head of FIFA, standing close by.
I cried when I saw that image. It makes me so angry.
Président de la FIFA, M. Infantino, invite M. Pierre Alain Mugenge, c'est que le président de la FIFA, en gros, la FIFA est satisfait du travail de la fédération. Moi, je comprends ça comme ça. Est-ce que le bon travail, c'est ça, l'abus sexuel, qui n'est pas traité par la fédération?
In March of 2023, Mugenge took part in the re-election of Infantino as FIFA president. And in July 2023, Mugenge was himself elected to join the highest ranks of CAF as a member of the executive committee. We confronted the CAF secretary general about the lack of CAF and FIFA sanctions against Mugenge.
If today there is no decision of the justice saying that Mugenge, you are guilty, you are guilty, you are sanctioned, how CAF can sanction this? This is internally matter of the justice of in Gabon, of course.
Okay, so until they find him guilty, CAF and FIFA cannot do anything else but support him.
We have to accept the principle of
innocence until proven guilty.
Exactly. Okay. Of course.
CAF and or FIFA, they have no obligation to wait for a state decision before they sanction someone. So presumption of innocence, yes, but it cannot be a justification to not sanctioning people for violations of disciplinary codes and codes of ethics. This is the exact reason why these codes exist.
Est-ce qu'ils font simplement en se disant que le temps va passer, les gens vont commencer à oublier, mais nous on va pas oublier. Il y a des choses qui ne se font pas.
The more time I spent in Gabon, the more I realized that the full extent of abuse here may never be known. When we tried to speak to some victims, our team was threatened and conversations were blocked.
They are absolutely terrified, and this only breaks my heart because it shows just how much grip the perpetrators still have on their victims to this day.
Before I left Gabon, Parfait took me to the newest and biggest football stadium in the country, the Stade de l'Amitié, built for the Africa Cup of Nations in 2012. Little more than 10 years old, it has fallen into disrepair and can no longer be used. Parfait's own future is just as uncertain. Since speaking out, he has received threats and support for his football school has dried up.
Je suis abattu, mais ceux qui m'ont connu comme joueur aujourd'hui me connaissent comme homme, savent que je n'abandonne jamais. Je n'abandonne jamais, je n'abandonnerai jamais. Mais j'espère qu'il y aura quelqu'un de bonne foi un jour qui pensera que, ah, parfait, on fait quelque chose d'intéressant pour le pays, nous allons le regarder, nous allons l'accompagner, nous allons le suivre. C'est tout ce que je demande, pas plus.
Même chose.
I have so much respect for Parfait. He spoke up when he had nothing to gain and everything to lose. He's fighting to make things better for kids while making things worse for himself. If one day I have the opportunity to meet him in person, I would want to hug him and thank him 1,000 times over.
J'ai du mal à croire que la pédophilie, je peux l'enrayer complètement. Ça, je n'ai pas ce bâton magique pour avoir la certitude que je peux le faire. Mais ce que je peux, c'est que je peux lutter contre, estomper, essayer d'aller au bout.
Peut-être c'est pas moi qui en profitera, mais mes enfants demain ou après-demain diront « Oui, papa s'était bien battu. »
We put the allegations in this film to Fegafoot, CAF and FIFA. All parties condemned child abuse in any form in the strongest possible terms. Fegafoot and its president, Pierre-Alain Mugenyi, denied all the allegations made against them and stressed that the appropriate actions were taken as soon as any allegations of sexual abuse in Gabonese football were made public. They said they do not recognize any criticism against the investigation set up by the Fegafoot Ethics Commission in December 2021, since it was set up in accordance with Fegafoot regulations. FIFA and CAF denied all allegations made against them and reiterate that the FIFA investigation initiated in May of 2022 by the FIFA Ethics Commission is still ongoing. FIFA and CAF stressed that all its investigations are handled in accordance with requirements made by the FIFA Code of Ethics, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, the European Court of Human Rights, and Swiss law. CAF stated that its president, Patrice Motsepe, in addition to other CAF delegations, visited Gabon primarily to emphasize CAF's zero tolerance to sexual abuse and to support or assist investigating authorities. CAF stated that Mr. Mugenyi was a guest at the FIFA World Cup along with all other FIFA member association presidents and that Mr. Motsepe greeted Mr. Mugenyi in this context. CAF claims that at that point, there were no pending charges against Mr. Mugenyi. The former Gabonese sport minister, Franck Nguema, strongly denies having been informed by anyone about sexual abuse allegations in football prior to the allegations being made public by The Guardian in December 2021, and says he then immediately announced a judicial investigation and several coaches from a number of sports were arrested.
You are now tuned in to the Eagle Sports Zone.
Brought to you by Premier Bet Namibia Totes. Create your account now at premierbet.com and use promo code Namibia264. Premier Bet, win big, win now.
Welcome back to the Eagle Sports Zone. That is all the time we have for this evening. Do make sure to stay tuned to your number one talk radio station and we'll be back same time, same place. Next week, Sunday, live from our studio here in Windhoek. This has been the first edition of the Eagle Sports Zone. And do stay tuned for the return of the Villager newspaper, which will be back this coming week.